Welcome to Mecha Do About Nothing, the only mecha podcast whose hosts are undercover Gundam Fight referees. I'm your host, Ian Gregory.
And I'm your host, Daniel Forziat.
And this week we've watched Mobile Suit Gundam Build Fighters episodes 9 through 16, the middle third, the second third. I don't know if you can, the middle third of Build Fighters, the world's greatest advertisement.
Yes, truly. And speaking of advertisement,
we get to new levels of advertisement this week, by the way.
Speaking of advertisement, this has spawned other advertisement shows. They're like the Frame Mom Girls show came out like after this and stuff.
Oh, like, were you with me when we went to, I think it was like me and some other friends, maybe we went to Gundam Planet, and I think you might have been there, and this guy really, we were talking and looking at the display Gunpla. Because it was a bit of a drive for us at the time. We're like, oh, we're going to go take the pilgrimage up to Gundam Planet. And a guy was like, you have to look at frame arms. And tried real hard to sell us on frame arms.
The girls or the actual frame arms?
Just the actual frame arms. Notwithstanding. Okay. So you had just watched Frame Arm Girls and were pleased to report that it was terrible, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's really bad. But I guess this is nothing new because like Beyblade and Yu-Gi-Oh! Are sort of like... Wait, Yu-Gi-Oh! Yeah, no, yeah, actually... Yu-Gi-Oh! Came first before the card game, right?
No, the manga came first. Then TV show that did not include the card game. And then the manga switched focus to the card game, as did the TV show, and that's when they launched the card game.
Okay, so that's actually appropriate, like, in that sense.
It developed fairly naturalistically, which is that when he did the card game arc, it was because he was interested in revisiting, like, a idea he had earlier, and was like, I'll just do a whole arc about the card game, and it was so popular, he's like, I guess this is a card game manga now. And by the time Battle City came out, you know, the second season of the show that was in America,
yeah,
the actual card game had released, so the actual rules were in effect. Before that, there were no real rules to the card game, because he was just drawing them,
which makes so much more sense. That makes, like, right. 1,000 times more sense. Okay.
So that's why there's all that revision at the beginning of the Battle City arc where they're like, we're using official rules now because now there are rules to the card game they can use. Because
me and my friends used to play with, like, 2,000 life points and stuff, and it, like, didn't make sense.
So arbitrary. But yeah. It was 2,000 so they could get those fights done with in, like, 2 chapters.
And they're like, no, these need to be 8,000 life points.
Also, it used to be, like, an auto-battler in that your monsters had to attack every turn.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's like all sorts of strange rule changes. The Yu-Gi-Oh! Manga is a pretty good trip. It's pretty fun.
By the way, this is no Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast.
Oh, God. Look, there are robots in Yu-Gi-Oh! I think we can get away with it just this once. But
okay.
No, you're right, though, that like Frame Arms would not necessarily have been the kind of show to have a kids show to promote it if Build Fighters had not demonstrated this methodology.
And I guess the only other thing I can think of is Beyblades and maybe Zoids? Because all Gundam, really.
Yeah, it's like, there's like a distinction between Beyblades and Zoids and like Bakuman? No, Bakugan.
Oh, yeah.
Which was after my time, well after my time. That those were all like conceived to sell toys to begin with, perhaps because they saw the success of Yu-Gi-Oh! But I don't know if Frame Arms falls in that category.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
And Gundam was conceived to sell toys to children. And ostensibly 0079 is a children's show, but not in this way.
I actually have another thing to say about that. Can I go on a small tangent really quickly?
Dan, what is this show but small tangents linked together?
So if you're unfamiliar, there is a Gundam 40th anniversary cross Hello Kitty 45th anniversary, like, miniseries. And I decided to watch the first 2 episodes. It's like they're 2 minutes long each. And it is unbelievably bizarre.
Nice.
Because it's like Hello Kitty. She like turns the TV on and like Haro's like, hey, you got to go save this guy Amuro. And then it cuts to Amuro shooting a bunch of Zakus. And it's like, what? And it's just like weird because it's real. And it feels very out of character for Hello Kitty to be assisting Amuro shooting people in real life.
You know, also... They just released some sort of like 10-minute 40th anniversary animation. It's just like a side story from 0079. I haven't seen it yet. It's on YouTube. But it's like it's origin style animation and everything. So maybe I'll check it out.
There's such teases with that stuff.
I'm so annoyed at them. I mean, after I went through all that trouble to explain how Gundam the Origin is the best starter Gundam, they're not just going to reanimate it. I really do wish they would reanimate 0079.
They need to listen to what you have to say.
Yeah. Sunrise, listen to this podcast and do everything I tell you to do.
Gundam will be great again.
All right. Overall, I like these eight episodes. Like every eight episode block, like every block of Build Fighters, it's breezy and fun, and there's a lot of good stuff. And there's not actually, like, if something's bad, it isn't on screen for long enough for you to, like, for it to be that bad.
Yeah. And even the little side story that was the first episode with China and Caroline had some,
Caroline,
like...
Caroline is so funny.
Yeah, they had some, like, important points there, too. Like, that's where we saw Nils and stuff. So I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah. And Caroline, spoiler, shows up again later. And... But also, she's hilarious because she keeps getting distracted from hating Gina.
Yeah.
She also does the full-on Ojo-sama laugh. Oh, good timing. It's spooky. I hope someone just, like, has this on in the background, and that's what, like, wakes them up out of their reverie. It's like, whoa. What horrifying thing is happening on Mechadoo About Nothing today?
To American boys doing that laugh.
Look, I've played against enough Koreans in Street Fighter V to know how to do that laugh.
Oh my god. It's so true.
Alright, here's the summary for these eight episodes. China enters a local all-girls tournament against her rival, Carolyn Yajima. With the help of Sei and Reiji, she manages to defeat her and takes second place. Sei and Reiji travel to Shizuoka for the world tournament. President Yuki debuts as Meijin Kawaguchi, the entrant from PPSE, the company that makes Gundam Battle. On the second day, everyone enters a battle royal, where only one-third of the fighters can survive. Or is it one-third are eliminated? Something involving a third of the fighters. The president recognizes Reiji from somewhere. President of PPSE recognizes Reiji from somewhere and freaks out and deploys a mega-sized Zaku into the arena to stop them, though it is barely defeated by the combined efforts of our main characters. On day three, each Gunpla is given a random weapon and opponent. However, to continue rigging the match against Reiji, the president arranges for them to get baseballs, and their opponent, national team baseball player Luong Dalara, who had an average of 0.89, I'm sorry, that breaks suspension of disbelief for me, gets a baseball bat, and they have to play baseball against him. Using their new Gunpla special abilities, they barely win. Also, Reiji keeps running into Isla outside the event, and they are becoming tsundere friends. Reiji and Sei breeze through the next couple of rounds of competition, and the sixth round is a race. The president hires the Gunpla mafioso, Shi, to interfere in the race, and Sei and Reiji's early lead is foiled by his custom Zeong. They break free but only manage to get second place. In order to qualify, they need to win the last round of the tournament, a one-on-one match with Riccardo Fellini. Sei and Reiji fight Fellini to a draw, which earns them just enough points to qualify them in last place. Reiji underestimates just what it takes to build Gunpla, so he goes out to try it and runs into Isla. A mysterious man teaches both of them the ropes, and then they are attacked, like, in the battle system, which raises the question of what Sei was even trying to do here, by Sei, and Reiji and Isla defeat him. The mysterious man reveals himself to be Takeshi Yori, Sei's dad and international Gundam fight referee, and he literally beats up Sei and arrests him.
I mean, what else would you do, right? You gotta beat him up. It's the Gunpla Mafia.
It's mostly, I guess this is, like, we timed this out really well because next episode is the first actual round of the round of 16 world tournament finals.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get through all the qualifiers with these episodes. So good job us for accidentally, like, perfectly chunking out this show.
Yeah. It's a little weird stakes though, too, because our first episode is again, that episode with China and Caroline that has, like, absolutely nothing to do with the next, like, rest of episodes, because, like, I forget that this is, like, such a perfectly paced show where it's just like, get us to the world tournament, that's it, and that happens, like, well,
episode nine.
Yeah, well before the halfway point, right, which is awesome. So we get this, like, cool, huge, high stakes tournament, like, for the pretty much the majority of the show.
Yeah, it's like, it's honest to god, it's an improvement on the G Gundam format. Sorry, now I'm thinking about how he gets to the world tournament in G Gundam. That's really funny.
Fun
Psyche makes an appearance. This is a thing
for
later.
Oh, yeah, Fun Psyche does make an appearance.
But during the race segment, Niels Nielsen rides Fun Psyche, which is hilarious to me.
If we say G Gundam one more time, we'll summon Matt, our friend, who constantly asks us when we're going to do G Gundam.
He's emailed the podcast like 5 times asking us to do G Gundam.
This is G Gundam erasure, whatever he says. Domon erasure.
All right, so let's do some highlights because there's like a ton of really funny stuff here. Mm-hmm. First highlight for me, I think, is the obvious high point of this block is that fight with Riccardo Fellini.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, gosh. Episode, what is it, 15? 16. 15. 16 is the dad episode. Episode 15 is like, Kirara is like, if you surrender, you'll both get into the round of 16. Won't you do that to, like, let them get in? He's like, yeah, sure. And then he doesn't. Because he's got the Gundam fighter spirit.
That's, like, a little too real for me, though. For some reason, like, these things hit way too close to home, where she's just like, oh, yeah, and, like, you can totally let them win, right? Because you have enough points. And stupid Riccardo Fellini obviously never did the math in his head, so he didn't realize until that point. And now mm-hmm. he's, like, in this moral quandrum where he's like, do I let them win so that way we can all get through? Or, like, but he can't forgive himself if he did that, right?
Yeah.
And so he has to make, it's just like, it's like, I'm watching a kid show about selling me Gunpla. Why is this getting a little too real, right? Settle down, guys. I don't want that.
It's just, we'll talk more about this fight in detail and what makes it so good, but it's up there for really solid fights, not just in the series, but I think in Gundam. Some of the best fights in Build Fighters are also some of the best fights in Gundam, because Gundam doesn't often concern itself with having good fights. Like,
yes.
Usually the fights in Gundam are there to advance the story or have some emotional resonance. So they don't have, like, cool anime fights, top 10 Watch Mojo-style entries, except in this franchise.
Yeah. And I'm thinking back, you're right. The only, like, really big fights we get is, like, obviously New Gundam and Sazabi, and maybe some with, like, Gundam like, some of the more recent stuff, right? A lot of the older stuff,
the more recent
stuff,
fights
right.
are more concerned with, like, watchability, but in New Gundam Sazabi is still, like, a fight of ideology and characters. Like, that's more important than, like, the staging. It's not, like, really dramatic and exciting. I feel like when I think of, like, top fights, I always imagine, like, you go to Google and you type in, like, Naruto versus Pain, and you just watch, like, that clip or whatever. Naruto versus Pain, sorry, not great in my opinion. It's, like, okay. But, I don't know, the deeper cut reference is, like, Naruto and Sasuke versus Momoshiki. Or,
These are all Kimetsu
no Yaiba, episode 19. But the point is, like, you watch, like, that 5-minute clip or whatever. That's like best fights.
Yeah, I mean, I do that with literally Dragon Ball every other week, so it's fine.
Oh, sure. Luffy versus Bueno. Luffy versus Danmachi.
Please make that a Haikyuu reference for me. I can't understand.
Haikyuu?
Yeah, I'm reading Haikyuu.
Tsukushima makes that block. I don't know if you've seen that yet, but that's the one from Haikyuu.
Dang, dude, you really know your stuff. I'll start whipping them out there. What's next, Ian? What can you get me next?
I mean, on Dragon Ball Z, I'm a big fan of Vegeta versus Pui Pui, because it's just Pui Pui being like, ha, we're on my planet, which is 5 times Earth's gravity, and Vegeta like one-shots him. It's really good.
That is really funny. I think they cut that from Kai, by the way.
I don't think so. Maybe they did. I don't remember. I haven't seen that part of Kai. I love the Super Saiyan Man arc. I think it's underrated, but the end of Super, the last fight in Super. That's another one I watch. Goku, Frieza, and Android 17 versus Jiren. What a lineup, man.
I wouldn't know, because I don't actually watch Super. I know it's awful.
Super has its moments.
Well, that was our first highlight of, we have about 5 more and the rest of the podcast to go.
The next two are related, which is that, so that Reiji enters the president's office and beats up all his staff, and he's like, stop messing with me. And the president's like, oh, he didn't recognize me from our mysterious past together. And so to recover, the president is just laying his head on his assistant's thighs, and she's just patting his head like, there, Mr. President, it'll be okay. And he's like, yes, but what if he finds out the secret behind Plavsky particles? And then she cuts him off by dumping him on the floor. She just full-on throws his head on the floor, runs to the window. And he's like, what was that about? She's like, I thought we were being listened on. And the camera pans up, and it's Niels Nielsen in full ninja gear, rappelling down the roof of the house, like the walls of the house, which goes completely unaddressed as to, like, why does he own that? Why is he doing that? Is this what... is this what it looks like to, like, be getting a grant as a scientist in a lab, is you have to, like, ninja gear your way around to study your particle? Is this academia?
I want someone to make, like, a Sekiro Shadows Die Twice meme out of that. Like, just, like, just, like, clip him into that.
That's a good cosplay idea, though. Ninja outfit Niels Nielsen. Get your little HG Sengoku ashtray, yeah.
Yeah, that would be too deep. No one would have any idea. It's like, hey,
yeah,
that,
exactly.
Remember those 20 seconds?
Maybe like 5 years ago, or yeah. What, 7 years ago when this show came out. Oh God. Next highlight is definitely the Ricardo Fellini Extinction Squad.
Yes.
So Chomer from Germany shows up and he's like, Fellini, you stole my girlfriend. And Fellini's excuse is that she wanted it, which is, like, not good, Fellini. Fellini's canceled. And then Chomer's in a gaw, and the gaw opens up, and there's, like, 20 other dudes in there who Fellini stole their girlfriends.
Yeah.
And they all team up to beat him. That's so goofy.
I branching off of that a little bit, I really like when he goes up to talk to Kirara at the bar, but doesn't know it's her, and he just starts, like, hitting on her. She's like, how'd you know it's me? And he's like,
She does the hair thing.
Yeah, and
that's,
it's just
really
like,
good.
Gosh.
Fellini, you dork.
What a dog.
Next highlight, baseball.
Yeah.
This was so weird.
In typical, you know, Japan fashion, just baseball, you know? Against, an episode with baseball in it. Heck it. Just throw it in there.
Yeah, it's just wild. It gets long.
And I love it, too, because it's, like, the most succinct you could possibly ever make baseball. It's just, like...
It's one at-bat.
One at-bat, and that's it.
Oh no, they caught the ball. Don't worry. It doesn't count because the ball disintegrated. That's a good line.
Yeah, it, like, blew its arm off, too. That was really funny.
That's a really good... That's like, a weird but pretty good one. It's like a change of pace I don't mind, in a way.
Yeah, and it's cool because I think if we just had, like, 16 fights over these episodes, it would get probably just a little bit boring, but they're spicing it up a little bit with, like, the Battle Royale and everything, too, which I appreciate.
Speaking of which, let's talk about the World Tournament setup in our first discussion topic.
Oh, yes, let's do it.
This is kind of a bad tournament. You were just saying it's nice they're spicing it up. But one of the rounds is just a shooting gallery, and they're allowed to use their computers to shoot for them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of...
And then they're playing that game where you throw little rubber things into the baskets. That's a little confusing.
And also, like, for me, the race, too, where they're like, hey, you can just, like, shoot each other during the race. And it's like, if this was at all realistic, and I know this is a very... unrealistic show.
Wait,
it's like you would just start the race and immediately just start shooting at other people, right?
Yeah,
like,
there's not enough shooting.
And so it feels really weird in the episode where they're like, all right, let's go. And then, like, everyone is, like, neck and neck, but not shooting at each other. And you're like, wait.
I would have loved to have seen someone's strategy. Shomar tries this and gets disintegrated. But, like, it would have been funny if the Majin did this, where he shoots a few people at the start, then parks outside the lap marker, you know, the end line, and just, like, blasts people as they come in to pass him for, like, the lap. Because there's no alternate routes. You're on, like, a full-on, like, F1 racetrack.
Yes,
so
exactly.
I think they should have said that you can't shoot them or something.
Or like, maybe be, like, only on the third lap are you allowed to shoot.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, cool, right? Because it just, like, is sort of, like, there's game theory there that doesn't make sense.
There's, like, also an incredible amount of cheating that goes unnoticed by everyone.
Yes.
Not cheating on the part, by the way, of the players, actually, but cheating on the part of the, the organizers, in that they keep organizing for outside events to attack Sei and Reiji, and everyone's like, how strange. Moving on.
Yeah. They're like, wow, I can't believe their Gunpla fell in the middle of a lake for no reason, huh?
Oh, yeah. Crazy. We don't have cameras
so
down there, huh?
Huh.
Oh, God. Sei's mom shaking the TV during that section is so funny.
Oh, yeah. That is, like, really
good. She starts,
good.
Like, making angry noises and shaking the TV out of anger. It's really good. So there's 100 contestants, right? I think that's what they said.
Something
when we,
like that.
And they narrow it down to the final 16. And it seems to me like every country gets one entrant except for Japan, which has like six or so, one from each block, it says.
Yeah, I guess, right? Because, well, so there's Meiji Kawaguchi, who I...
Special entry.
He gets a special entrance, right?
They say PPSE special entry.
Okay.
Here's another question. Aila Jyrkiäinen is Finland's champion, but she's also the entry from Team Nemesis. So, but if Gawain isn't Finnish, couldn't he have also won a tournament and been a Nemesis entrant? Why does Nemesis only get one entrant? There's a distinction between teams and countries here that doesn't quite add up.
Yeah.
But then we've got, who else do we have? We've got a bunch of other contestants from other countries. Luong, Dulala.
Fellini's from Italy, obviously.
Italy. Niels. Mao's from Japan. Niels is the American champion.
There's the Argentinian, the twins that we don't really
know. Yeah, the twins from
anymore.
Argentina. But like, if Japan gets multiple entrants, I feel like America has enough, is a big enough country that it should have multiple entrants, if only in literal physical geographic size.
Yeah, right. Like I get it. It is a Japanese show, and like obviously the Japanese are more into this.
Gundam is proportionally 8 times more popular in Japan than in America. That's true, but
I did have a theory though. I was wondering if they were like testing the market with this, if they had like market data to find out which countries actually had a prominent amount of people who buy Gunpla, and then those are the people that they're portraying in the show. Because I was
wonder Thailand? If Argentina has like a surprisingly big
or Thailand
Gundam population or Thailand. Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder if they're doing this. I mean, being inclusive is fine, obviously, it's a world tournament. But still, I was like, I wonder if they're specifically choosing those countries because of that. Because I feel like the Philippines also has a large amount of Gunpla buyers there. Just a hunch. I don't know why. I feel like I just know that. So, like, I was wondering if maybe, like, that was a reason. But I don't know. But I was like,
dude, the Abbott Gorbian doesn't have a kit. You think if they wanted to test that, they would release the actual Thailand mobile suit in Thailand. But they kit for the Abbott Gorbian, which is kind of wild. Of course, if you look it up, there are some people who've done custom builds, because there always are.
Uh-huh.
The bane of my existence is like, oh, I wonder if there's a Gyara Dogra, like, heavy, heavy equipment type. Yeah, there is. If you're like that dude who's modified a bunch of Gyara Dogras into the heavy equipment types, but you can't buy one.
Yeah, it's right. It's like you buy these 3 kits, and then you just take this one part from this, and then you kitbash this, and then there you go.
But it's like, oh, you can't just buy this kit. Anyway.
Yeah.
But you're right, though, that I feel like there might be some calculation here into what countries are represented.
Mm-hmm.
So here's my question, though. How fast are these people at building high-quality Gunpla? I get it's like, oh, an arm got blown off, got to replace an arm. And actually, when the Starbuild Strike gets real beat up, in the baseball event, they use the Build Gundam Mark II for the next 3 events, which is a good unaddressed notice. But that also highlights that you're allowed to switch Gunpla between rounds. Obviously, people switch it for the race. But also, we see that, like, Chomer switches his, like, 3 times. And spoiler alert, the twins don't use that Zagok that we see them using in the Battle Royale during their episode later on. Though it is really, it's a cool shot of a Zagok, like, smashing someone's head against a tree and then sinking underwater. It's, like, the coolest that thing has ever looked.
Yeah.
So, why don't people just bring, like, 10 fully finished Gunpla they've built over the course of a year for each situation?
That's a good point.
I guess the idea is that, like, you want to improve the one you've got more than the ones you don't, but, like, I don't know.
Yeah. It is confusing. Weird. And, like, also, you're right, like... It like is really cool that like in their Olympic style housing that they have like an air booth and everything inside, like an airbrush booth inside of
the
room.
Oh, it's so cute, by the way, after the Fellini fight to see the two of them working together to repair their Gunpla side by side. It's like, oh yeah, I've done that. I not fought them, but like I've done the side by side building.
Yeah. But dang, yeah. I mean they're HGs, so it's like not crazy, but like the amount of
at the very least
work
just build multiple copies of your main fighter.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I get that Sei and Reiji, like, really ran out of time because Reiji showed up late, Sei didn't know he'd be going, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But some of these people are, like, consummate pros. They've been here, like, it's like their, like, 6th World Tournament or whatever. Like, they should just know this by now. Fellini, I get, because his gimmick is that he only has one kit and he just keeps changing the one kit and he never replaces it. Right. It's like the Ship of Jason paradox. Is it really the same? Wing Gundam. Sorry.
I love your really deep references, Ian. Just like,
trying to channel the reference spirit of Build Fighters.
Oh, that is good.
All right. Aila Jyrkiäinen. We're getting more of her.
Oh, yeah, we are. Oh, yeah.
So, in Gundam, romance is bad, typically. What are some romances that have worked out? Bright and Mirai.
Camille and Fa. But that, there's also a dead one there with Camille and Fa, so that, you know, whatever.
That's, and Camille and Fa was a rocky road, in which, I mean, he literally was in a coma.
Yeah, oh, okay, well, there's, you know, there's Char Aznabel and every lover he ever had. Oh, wait.
All of them worked out great, famously. Amuro Ray. really solid, good ending to his relationships there. No, it's just romance in Gundam. Love can't bloom in space. What is it called? What's the pulse of love can't be found. It's whatever.
It's like
No, now I'm thinking of Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, you're right. Always you
can
got
love
me tricky
bloom
too.
On a battlefield.
Yeah.
Sniper Wolf says, yeah, no. So the point is, this is actually like a cute little romance, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're enemies, they don't know it, so there's some drama there, but it's not so bad. And they have that funny gimmick with food, and they do that really funny thing together where they're building the Gunpla together. It's cute. It's so cute. It's really,
it's really
relaxing.
Adorable.
And it is also true that, like, as this was coming out, and in retrospect, people were, like, unanimously behind this romance and, like, were into it.
Yeah.
Which is actually fairly impressive to, like, write a romance that no one thinks is bad, considering how much the internet hates certain couplings. Like,
yeah. Because we already have, like, the Say and China relationship, where it's, like, two big nerds that just kind of are socially awkward and lame. And then you have two,
like,
hot-headed people.
Yeah. But the Say and China relationship is less funny and interesting, and it's less in the spotlight, I think, than the Ray, G, and Isla relationship is here.
Mm-hmm. But can I ask a question? Why does Isla have to wear that stupid outfit when she's doing Gunpla Battle?
Oh, it's for the embody system, dude. Spoiler. Sorry, spoiler. That does come up, though. It's super dumb. But really, it's a plot device so that Reiji doesn't realize who she is, but she knows who Reiji
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
Exactly. Let's be clear.
I feel like people would cosplay a bit, sort of like Meijin Kawaguchi does, and a lot of people else sort of like wear like stuff.
Meijin Kawaguchi.
Oh, gosh. Okay,
they explain the Meijin thing here. Yeah.
I watched an episode ahead, and I don't know. This is really minor, and I don't know if it was in this episode block or the next one. But there's like a scene where Meijin Kawaguchi is just working out. He's just working out.
Yeah, it's in like this one. It's in like 15 or something.
And he's just like,
he's kind of ripped.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm getting like a little woo over here. But he's like a freaking high school. You know, he's a middle
he's
school,
a high school
boy.
No, he's a high schooler because he's president of the high school. He's older than Say.
Ah, that's right. I'm like, dang.
It's pretty funny.
But Bill Painters does this weird thing, and this is going to get a little creepy. Not from me, but just in general, where they sort of abstract the age from these characters. And I'm just going to reference Fumina from Buildfighters Try.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, like that is the thing that's like really egregious. Like Bandai still aggressively sexualizes her. And she's in middle school, I think.
Yeah, it's not good. It's bad, bad, not good. Really like, though, that we get like a actually useful bit of video here when Reiji and Isla are learning to build Gunpla. Takeshi is like actually telling them really good advice on how you should build your first HG and like simple things you can do to make it better. Like, you could show someone this 10-minute segment or 5-minute segment, and like that's the instruction they need to snap build their first HG.
Yeah, which is really crazy, because he's like, you take these nippers, you make two cuts, you take this file, you file down the nubs, you put it together, panel line, boom, bada bing, you're out the door. And it's like, dang, dude.
He's like, here, take some top coat, see how much better it makes everything look. Like,
dang, dude.
But I really like that they've recognized that they're like, all right, if we're going to get kids into Gundam through this, we also need to teach them how to buy our toys. And they do that, and it's good. It works out. It's kind of funny to me that they have a real tutorial with all the power of, like, their animation department thrown into the middle of this episode.
And it just, like, takes me back to, like, gosh, whenever, like, the summer after this came out, where I'm just, like, I spent, like, a whole summer just building, like, real grades. Because, like, I had that real first Gunpla itch where you buy, like, 5 kits, and you're like, yes, and you just go through them.
Uh-huh.
It's, like, really nostalgic for that.
So watching this show has actually... I haven't finished building a kit in a while. I just sort of fell out of the habit. Since watching the show, I finished 2 kits.
I know. I saw your
one
Uzaku.
With painting. Yeah, I finished a 782 just to put on my desk at work. Snap built it. It was really cheap, old. The kit was kind of terrible. You know how, like, you get used to uniform shapes in HGs. The shoulder looks like this. Here's what the waist looks like. Yeah. I was not certain what I was building for a lot of this because it was so different. But yeah. I don't have my airbrush with me because where I live isn't conducive to it, so I tried dry brushing for the first time. So it was actually pretty easy.
Exciting.
Anyway, this show works. Now I'm like, oh, I've done a couple of kits out of my backlog. Can I buy more? But I should probably
finish. Right now you feel less bad buying more kits.
I still got 5 kits in my closet, and that's not even all of my backlog because the rest is in storage because I couldn't fit it in my apartment.
Oh, God.
So maybe I shouldn't buy more until I finish some of these. Hey, you're responsible for this because you gave me another HG.
Yeah, okay, I know, I'm sorry. And I have a really bad story, too. The first time I ever came to Japan, I bought a real-grade Star Build Strike, which is actually really funny. Still never even opened it.
Oh, my God.
That was, like, 4 years ago.
All right. So sad. Next up is, like, a really funny bit about this world that I love, which is that C is part of an organization called the Gundam Mafia, or Gunpla Mafia.
Yes.
And Yori's dad, Sei's dad, is part of the International Gundam Referees. What?
It's a little insane. This is like part of where the show is starting to get like a little wild with the whole Aryan thing and this. I do like to imagine though, with like the little suspension of disbelief.
You should call it Aryan, not Aryan.
Oh, my bad.
I think it's safer for everyone if you advocate how much you like Aryan instead of Aryan.
Sorry, Aryan. Sorry. Because like I like to think that the Gunpla Mafia, you know, they're the bad boys down the block. They're making counterfeit Gunpla parts. They're like holding, they're like, you know, going up to shop owners and like trying to sell them insurance, you know what I mean? You'd be like, it would be a real shame if something broke around here.
If someone broke into your model shop.
So, but you know, maybe we need some guys to crack down on that behavior.
But I love that Ramba Rawl is like, oh, sorry, Mr. Rawl, after he does that really funny fight with C,
yeah,
it's like, his name is C, he's from the Gundam Mafia, and Sei makes like the most incredulous face, which is exactly the face the viewer makes when they first hear the phrase Gundam Mafia. He's like, really? Gundam Mafia? What's really crazy to me, it's kind of ridiculous, is that Gundam referees have arresting power. Like, yeah. He whips out the handcuffs and takes that dude into custody.
Yeah. Dude, man, I'm telling you, these Gunpla Mafia guys could be dangerous. We don't know. I also like the idea that Sei's dad is so undercover that he cannot even contact his wife and child.
Well, he tries to find his wife, remember? So if you didn't know, Build Fighters really leans into having content after the credits. So make sure you're watching that.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is a legacy of it being aired during like a children's time block where there's like 4 shows in a row. Do you remember Saturday morning cartoons?
Of course.
Right. So, but those shows could assume people would watch until after the credits because kids would stay on to watch the next show.
Yeah.
So I think that might be why there's so much after the credits stuff here in Build Fighters.
And there's like chunk. It's like 30 seconds.
Real plot and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the end though of this episode, he shows up at his model shop right after Sei's mom, Rinko, has left to go to the tournament. And he starts crying because he wants to see his wife so bad. Takeshi Yori is a real wife guy. I respect that.
Yeah, and it's like he's like a guy we all need to be on. Like he has a mission and a job and he does it to his like best ability, even if that means neglecting his son. In typical Gundam fashion.
Gundam fashion. Well, we'll get to actually how he's like other Gundam dads a bit later.
Huh, Temre, huh?
So let's skip ahead here on the thing for a second. I have a request for you. Makers of Gundam, Bandai, Sunrise, I know you're listening to this podcast.
Oh God, here we go.
I know you've listened to us from day one. Stop making your female characters only use Bear Guys and SD Gundams. I swear to God, please... Please. Isla only gets to use a real Gundam when she's, or like mobile suit, when she's pretending to be a bad guy or when she is the bad guy. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they get to use, here are the list of approved mobile suits. Bear Guys, SD Gundams, and the Nobel Gundam.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that one girl's literally Alan B. Beardsley. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's a good one. But stop. One, SD Gundams, bad. I don't want to see them anymore. Not on a show like this.
Gross.
It's even worse. It's far more egregious in Try when Fumina has a pretty good mobile suit. Like, I like the GM Power GM cardigan. It's like a nice looking dude. And then she upgrades into an SD because she was using an unfeminine. It makes me so mad. Stop giving them little cute gimmicky kits and give them real death machines. More women war criminals. Like, I'm so mad about this. They're so lame and they could be doing so much more.
And it's unfortunate for you, Ian, that you couldn't say this when it was coming out, because boy, I got some bad news for you.
I know, it only gets worse.
It literally, it's like, I haven't seen Re-Rise yet, but
I've actually blacked out Build Divers from my mind. Are there female characters in that who use
SD the ninja gun? Girl, okay. And guess what she uses? A ninja SD gun.
Oh, you're
gun
right, she uses the SD gun. Oh, God.
But to be fair, minor spoilers for both of those shows, Winning Gundam and that SD, the ninja one, both have, like, HG forms as well.
Yeah, so. Girls can power up to being just like a normal guy. Oh, God.
Yeah, if they power up into, they get the guy's normal mobile suit. Huh, what does that say about women? Huh.
It just sucks that they get to use. I mean, the Baird guy is pretty funny because they have a good gag where it's filled with cotton. And she's like, well, in the original story. And you're like, wow, okay. She's so much like Say, because they're both always like, well, in the original fiction. that's a good one. But
I agree with you.
I hate it.
We need more girls like Shima who are willing to gas colonies.
No, Shima did not know what she was doing. Have you listened to the audio drama, Dan?
Whoa, are you defending someone who gassed a colony? I'm just kidding.
Oh, God. You're falling for zombie propaganda, Forziat.
Oh, don't you ever say that. I'm a real space noid of Zionzum Daikun's ideals. How dare you? All right. So before we nerd out too hard,
that was a little much. Yeah, it was. Build Fighters really brings out like the hardcore Gundam weeb.
Yeah, really. It's so good.
All right. Let's close out our main discussion here with the Fellini fight. This is definitely the best fight in the show so far. Probably the best episode. Episode 15 is the best episode of Build Fighters we've got so far. Mm-hmm. Though I will tell you that episode 18 is the single greatest fight in the history of Gundam, so we'll get there.
Gosh, what is that one? Who's that?
Bloodhounds, in which Majin Kawaguchi takes on the Renato twins. You know why I like it.
Yeah, I know why you like it.
So, this fight's really good. It's basically an encapsulation of everything that's good with the series, because you've got the main mobile suit from Wing and the main mobile suit from Seed duking it out. It's really well animated. It's just a fight. With like, and the characters who are the pilots are pretty likable people. Like, we're into their like interaction as well. Great music. And you're right, this is more of a sports anime at this point.
Yes.
It's all about, you know, fighting and winning and your spirit, and you're not gonna surrender because you want them to show you your fighting spirit. It's very Hajime no Ippo, very like that sort of thing.
Yo, he's doing the Dempsey roll.
Yeah. Yo, don't give Try ideas retroactively. Actually, if there was a Gundam Master that did the Dempsey roll, I'd be into it.
Yeah.
There is a Gundam Master in the race sequence, actually. I think it's skateboarding.
Oh, God.
It's really, yeah, dude, I don't know. But this fight is just really good. And it's kind of a varied fight, too. Because a lot of the fights in the series so far have been like flying around, shooting beams, someone charges up a large beam and blows up a couple mobile suits at once with it, right? That's
Gundam
how a lot
X
of these
Mao
fights have gone. Yeah, and the absorb shield.
Yeah.
On the Starbuild Strike. But this is like a different kind of fight, right?
Yeah, it has like different stages, which is why I think maybe it does feel like a real fight. Like, first they fight like head on. Then like each one of them sort of gets like their weapons picked off and it becomes sort of like close ranged and everything, and then it's, you know, the final finale, they basically kill each other and it's a draw.
Good way to finish that fight.
It's well paced out. And I think the thing that matters the most, like you're saying, is that we really like all the characters involved. So it's climactic both ways, right? Like, we don't want Sei and Reiji to lose, but we also don't really want Fellini to lose, right?
Yeah. Fellini's a fan favorite. I like Fellini. You like Fellini. Fellini. Yeah.
Kirara loves Fellini.
I love Kirara now. It's amazing how Kirara does such a face turn.
Yeah, oh my God,
when Luang Dulana hits that baseball and it just blasts her cup of soda out of her hand and she makes the most confused, funny face and sound.
God.
Yeah, Kira really
has been a real killer too recently. I like her.
But like that this is like, yeah, they've got the fighting, the long distance, they've got the trap. They make good use of the environment where Fellini keeps blowing up and like setting off landslides. The final fight where they both like remember their memories and Fellini remembers building the Fenice and they power on their beam sabers. That has some good choreography too, where like he does the classic deactivate the beam saber trick to drop underneath him and like slashes him, but then Reiji activates one at his belt to zap him.
Yeah, like, that's really cool too. It's like you see the belt jiggling and then he like hits the beam saber and it like goes through the Fenice.
Really good choreography. This is what I'm saying, is that Gundam doesn't usually concern itself with fight choreography. But I think because they're doing a kids show and they don't have to worry as much about the emotional resonance because it's a sports anime, basically, they can go as burning spirit as they want. And it pays off really well.
And I think, too, because it's also like they sort of lean into the fact that it's model kits in like a virtual world, too. And then the sense that like I don't really think we'd ever see this with actual mobile suits, too. Right? No. Like, a Gundam doesn't ever get, like, pushed onto the ground and dragged and, like, survive that, really. You know?
It doesn't They're lose like a little its bit more durable. Arm and legs and all of its weapons and its head. Like, that just doesn't happen, except maybe in the mid-season finale, before the upgrade, and the finale.
Yeah.
Instead, we can get, in Build Fighters, we can get that all the time, which means fights can be a lot more brutal in a way, or damaging to the kit.
Exactly. You're right, because the Gundam can't just lose all of its arms and legs, and then be like, okay, Amuro, we got more, so we're good.
We got more. Famously, they destroyed all the extra Gundam parts with Super Napalm in episode 2, so.
The Super Napalm.
The most powerful off-screen weapon, yeah. All right, we're going to close out this session of the discussion with our new little Build Fighter segment, the Reference Corner, where we talk about some of the references we caught. Of course, this represents probably barely 10% of the number of references, especially because we're not talking about, like, all the mobile suits we see.
Yeah, I need to make a list for next. Oh, well, we actually get like the biggest reference episode of all time ever the next set of
episodes.
I'm going to
open up a Google Doc while I watch it next time.
Yeah, and, but here's the ones that we could remember. And a lot of these are really deep too, in my opinion. So if you caught these while you were watching, then
you could reach us at, yeah.
Yeah, you're as equal to us. No one can be greater than us, so you can only be
Sorry, that's
equal.
Just the fact.
Yeah, sorry.
So one, this doubles as a really funny gag, which is Rawl is driving Gina to the event. And he's like, oh, we're going to come watch like the end and then the finals. And he's like, oh, well, you know, at my age, she's like, how old are you, Mr. Rawl? He's like, oh, me? I'm 35. And Gina's face is hilarious because Rawl is not 35. I'm pretty sure this is one of two references. I'm double checking the second. But first of all, it had been 35 years since 0079 had been released. And second, Ramba Rawl is 35 in Mobile Suit Gundam the animation.
Oh God!
Like,
he looks so much older than that.
I think that's the gag. He's actually 35. Born 0044 Universal Century, died 0079. This just goes into man. We missed that when we were first doing it because we talked about ages a lot when we did. Don't watch those episodes, by the way. Our first 5 episodes, they're not very good, but.
We'll do a reboot when they make their origin episode.
God. But we talked about how 0079 is terrible at representing age. I did not realize how young Ramba Rawl is. That's such a good gag.
I also love that part, too, because I think it's like, it might be, I forget when it is. But when Rawl's going off to go, see what C is up to, he does, like, this little tiptoe walk, and he's wearing, like, cargo shorts, and he's got, like, these skinny legs. It's so funny.
I love
funny.
Rawl's design. He's so good.
Yeah, he's really good.
When Sei dreams of his father in episode 16, he's running up the steps to Temre's apartment, and his dad is living in Temre's apartment from, like, side 6 in 0079.
And he even has, like, the little module on his desk. Yeah, like, the weird, really like, Zaku info thing.
When Sei's mom is packing up to go to the world tournament to see Sei, she's humming the Gundam Seed opening.
I actually didn't know that, so that's well done. I how did you know this? Because you've never seen Seed either.
Yeah, but I've heard that opening, dude. I listen to a YouTube video that's all Gundam openings ever from front to back sometimes.
Oh, yeah, those are good. And you're like, yes.
when Chomer is fighting Fellini, he throws the Gaul down, like, exactly like Garma did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To the white base, right?
Rawl wakes up late and says, in the middle of a fight, Rawl forgot to fight, which is the line that Ramba Rawl uses when he's invading the white base.
Uh-huh.
I think, right? He's in the middle of a fight, Ramba Rawl forgot to fight.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I think it's when he was talking to Sayla, right? He's like, oh, Artesia.
Fellini says he's going to grasp victory with his right hand. That's a G Gundam reference.
Yes. And okay, my next one is extremely deep, I think. So there's like this one, I don't even remember when it is. I just remember seeing the guy. There's like a reporter or something. And then they're just in the TV shot. It's just the reporter from 00, like the one who works for Catheron. He's got the scraggly beard.
Is this the shot during when Say's mom is imagining being interviewed? Because that would make sense too.
Yeah.
If she's imagining it's a character from 00. But I don't
know.
That
would make sense.
That's a good pull.
This other one's a bit of a stretch, but I choose to believe this is a reference. When Reiji is being tailed by Isla and she follows him into the Gunpla store, and he's like looking around and he picks up an Elmeth and he's like, is this a Gunpla too? Like, is this a Gundam? I don't know. And that I think is a reference to Lala Soon and the Flanagan Institute. And of course,
Isla says in her first appearance, the white one will win. Which is also what Lala says in her first appearance.
Oh, so yeah. So there's like a lot of cool Lala, Isla cross things there.
I like how Ramba Rawl is like, yes, Reiji has less experience, but Say's knowledge of Gundam stories makes him a better fighter. One, hilarious line. Two, then he sets the bazooka trap from Char's counterattack. And maybe from 0079 we were discussing, we're not sure.
Yeah, it's something. But yeah, it's like the tripwire bazooka to distract them.
Yeah, good one. And then lastly, Takeshi is giving advice to Reiji and Isla to fight the Zeong. He's like, get up close to the Zeong. Like, it's weaker there. And then he's like, oh, wait, I forgot this one had legs. It's really good.
Yeah. So, and there's
some good references.
I'm sure a ton more that we missed. I've been sort of like kind of intermittently watching, but I've been sort of like, I take my eyes off this a little bit more than I normally would just because I've seen this so many dang times.
Yeah, actually,
and
same.
And I know there's a really quick shot where they, and it might be in the next set, so sorry if it is. But there's Mir Campbell and Lacus Klein, like twins, like dressed up in the crowd. So look for that if you haven't seen it already.
Next week is like the most references of any media ever. Episode 23 or 24. 23, I think.
Gundam Festival or something right before the finals.
Yeah, Gundam Eve or something. Cool. It's unreal how many references there are.
Yeah, and it's really cool. And they sort of throw them in your face, so you'll know it when you see it.
It's there for that reason, but that'll be a fun one to try to talk about. And there is an article cataloging every reference in that episode that we'll link to when we get to that one, because it's...
Oh, I don't even need that, Ian.
Oh, boy. Tough.
You forgot. Tough, I'm a pro, and I've seen everything but Igloo. Oh, God, help me.
Igloo.
I don't want to watch Igloo.
I don't want to watch Igloo either.
I don't want to watch Igloo.
Igloo hurts. All right, it's the Mech Corner.
Oh, boy.
And we got some goodies this week, as always. Good mech designs in this show. Let's start off with our main suit here, the Starbuild Strike. So this is our upgraded Build Strike Gundam full package. So here's the thing with this guy. It's got the big gun. It's got the absorb shield. Double V fin. Same. It's very similar to what we've seen before. The big difference is that it's a little sleeker, and it's got a RG system, which is when it turns particles and spreads them all the way throughout the frame, so that it's like it's more it's easier to control, faster, stronger, but also it like damages the system a little. Of course,
I like to
imagine
all
good boosts.
This is also just in reference to their RG line, right? Those by RGs, they're better than HGs, you know.
Also, I don't know if you noticed this when he's discharging. First, we see the rifle mode.
Yes.
And then we see the speed mode. And then it also says aqua mode, which we never get to see, which feels like a lost opportunity because there is a portion where they are being drowned.
I want to think that maybe they did that thing where Tomino's like, oh yeah, this mobile suit from Jireko can fly, but I forgot about it, so it never does it. You know? Or maybe they just wanted to have more modes to make it look cool. I don't know. I don't know the reason why. But yeah, it seems like a missed opportunity, you know, when they were underwater being attacked by the mafia.
I love this show.
But whatever.
So, all right, next up is... I mean, there's not too much to say unless you have something else you want to say about the Starbolt Strike. It's a very conventional hero gun.
I have something to say I dislike about it.
Yeah.
When it, like, makes the little portal thing that it uses to activate its, like, RG abilities, I actually don't like mm-hmm. that, because that is sort of too abstract for Gundam.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, like, Gundam is usually, like, fairly well explained in terms of how its ridiculous science works, which is fine, because at least they try to explain it. And I get it, and I know this is an actual Gundam, but it just sort of, like, makes this weird, I can't even describe it, because it's just, like, a ring of light that mm-hmm. it, like, pierces to activate its abilities. And I'm just like, where does that come from? Like, what is that? So that little bothers me, because I'm like, that feels like it feels too anime.
Yeah.
For Gundam. But that's it.
Nope, that's worth. That's notable.
But you know, it's just a build strike. I like the first one better, but that's just me.
Next up is a really good one. This is the Abigor Bean, piloted by Luang Dorada, based on the Abigor from Victory.
Oh, is it? It's not based off of the Hammurabi?
No, it's based on, I mean, if you look up the Abigor, you will see.
I'm going to look this up now. Oh, an Abigor is, like, actually something.
Yeah. So it's purple, though, and it's designed to look like a beetle with a split head. It's got the three eyes, the bulky body. This is a really neat looking dude, because it looks like a G Gundam suit. Oh.
Yeah.
I'm going to put the picture of this for the picture of the episode on the website. Here's a reference callback. When they're fighting the Megasai Zaku, Niels is like, it's so useless. They're tilting at windmills. And it cuts to Don Quixote tilting at a windmill Gundam, at Nether Gundam.
Oh, nice.
So tilting at windmills, Dan, do you know what it means? It's an expression, because in Don Quixote de la Mancha, the first novel, Spanish novel, this guy who believes he's a knight, he's delusional, goes to fight some windmills because he thinks they're giants. So the phrase tilting at windmills has become to mean, like, impossible, doing something impossible, misunderstand, like, you know, doing trying to fight something you can't, not understanding the situation. So he's like, they're tilting at windmills, and it shows the knight attacking another Gundam.
Nice. It's a nice little, really deep reference.
I took a screenshot of it when I saw it, so I'll put it up with this episode.
I was like, of course someone with a big literary brain like yourself would get that.
I have read Don Quixote.
I've only been to the store many times. It's a famous shopping store in Japan.
Good reference on your own.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I like the Abigor Bean because it's so ridiculous.
It is. And I'm glad you told me that it is not the Hammurabi, even though it kind of looks like it.
Yeah. I like this a lot because it's like... Just because, I don't know, it feels like this is the kind of custom suit someone would have. Like, I like when someone has a mobile suit that a character in the show has a mobile suit that reflects, like, uniqueness to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is Luang Dorada's signature mobile suit, the Abigor Bean.
And, you know, like, when he was a kid and watched that, he was like, you know what? This is cool.
I like that thing.
And that's why he made it.
I want to talk next about the Baku tank, which appears in the race sequence, which is, like, a ground tank version of the Baku from Seed.
Which is already ridiculous, right?
Which is already, like, a dragon, like, tank. And that has a tank mode, too, but it's, like, a dragon thing. It's so stupid, but
it's just a Zoid.
Yeah. I love that it shows up here. It's so ridiculous.
It is
also,
really,
the Baku,
really,
like, holds a beam saber in his mouth, which is really stupid, but...
Yeah.
I love that this is what they've got. I like the Renato twins in general, and I like that they keep changing mobile suits, and this is a really funny one to have.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, next is the Beginning Gundam, which is not unique to this series, but we won't ever see it again, because I doubt we're going to watch Gundam, Bozu Gunpla Builders Beginning G.
Yeah, because it's like 30 minutes long.
So this thing is... actually, like, kind of different looking. It's got a weird chest compartment, like, with the bulging chest compartment. Is this a Ippei Gyobu creation? Who designed this? No, it's a Atsushi Sigeta and Junichi Akutsu. So, this thing, Akutsu did all the Seed suits. It's got, like, it's I think the most notable thing is that its V-fin is actually, like, a laser V-fin, which is kind of neat. And it's just got a ton of beam sabers on it.
Yeah. And it's just got, like, colors. I like the dispersion of colors. There's just, like...
Yeah.
It's broken up.
It's good. Yeah, good color separation. It uses the three beam sabers simultaneously, like claws. That's kind of clever. It's got gimmicks that are good.
Yeah, it's. I think it's fine. I feel like this is like what the Gundam Age 1 suit should have been.
Sure.
That's just. My
I think they did a good job with this suit, though.
Yeah, I like it. It's fine.
Yep.
It looks like a Gundam.
Unlike the next thing we're gonna look at, the Commando Gundam. Oh no, it's Command Gundam. SD Command Gundam.
Is it really? I thought it was SD Commando Gundam.
Nope.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're right.
SDV-04 Command Gundam. It's from SD Command Chronicles. It's an SD Gundam. I don't know if we've covered one of these before, have we?
I guess not. Would you like to explain to any listener who doesn't know what an SD Gundam is?
SD stands for super deformed, which is to say like a chibi style, like short, squat, exaggerated version. I don't know. I don't want to keep talking about them. I really don't like them. This thing has got, you know, a rocket launcher on its side and two big guns, and it's short and it's green and yellow, and then it gets thinner and ejects its armor and has a knife for its smaller form.
SD Gundams. I'm actually not... Okay. This is going to be weird and kind of... If you don't know what an SD Gundam is, it's sort of hard to explain. But SD Gundams can have two different eyes. If you buy an SD Gundam kit, they will come with eyeball eyes, which is the things that I think makes people dislike them, because it's like they have pupils and it's really weird.
Yeah.
Or they just have enlarged normal eyes. So if you get a chance, if you look up an SD Gundam with just the normal eyes, they don't look that bad. I would never build one or buy one unless it's the SD Zeong, Neo Zeong, because it's still like $40 and it's huge because it's SD, right? But yeah, when you make them have the stupid pupils, like to make them sort of more human-like, that's when I think they look really bad. But that's just what I think.
Yep, I'm with you. Here's the thing, though. The SD Gundam Crossray, the new SD Gundam game.
Yes.
I'm like kind of interested in it. Like, and a lot of it is that the designs for like the SD Gundams in like Crossrays are really good. They look clean and like interesting, and I'm trying to find an example right now. This is why I'm trailing off.
I think I know what you may be saying too. So there's like a new, I don't think they're SDs, but there's like a new chibi design of Gundams they're going for that they're making in action figures instead of model kits.
Oh,
where they're
still
deformed. But they're slightly elongated, so the proportions are a little bit better.
So here's some distinctions. In SD Gundam Crossrays, they're just smaller Gundams. They don't have the eyes. They're not the chibi cute SD signature style design.
Yeah, yeah.
So they just look like shorter Gundams, which makes sense for a strategy game. It's like Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yes.
And they sort of look more like the Gundam Converge line of toys. Which I have one of because I found one in a Barnes & Noble. Actually, I really like the way the Gundam... Look up the Converge if you're interested.
I think I have
one. Hard to find in America, but I'm sure they're all over the place. They're just like smaller versions of signatures, but they retain some of the fidelity and like classic design.
They're like sort of like gacha toys, right?
You see what they are on the outside, but they come in little boxes, yeah.
Yeah. I have one. Okay, I know what you're talking about. I just threw away the box, so I don't know that they were called Converge. But yes,
yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I have one on my desk. And yeah, they're like...
They're perfect
still,
for that, for like putting on your desk.
They still have like a slightly larger head, but they kind of have to maintain like the way
sensibility.
It looks. Yeah, right? But yeah, I agree with you. So maybe if they could start making SD Gundams look more like that, that would be better. That'd be cool. So Bandai, listen to us. Make them like that now.
Bandai, yeah. But I do really like the Gundam Converge actually look quite good. So it's kind of distressing that like SD Gundams look like this when an SD Gundam could look like that.
Yeah, like they know, they just aren't there.
Yeah.
Dang, I want to get SD Gundam Crossrays too, man.
I know, it's so expensive on Switch though. It's like $80. I missed that window. I should have gotten it right when it came out.
You can buy it on Steam.
I guess I can. I just like, it seems to me like the kind of game I want to play on a Switch, right?
I totally agree with you. And the worst part is, I want to
take that bad boy on a plane.
It's not on eShop either, right? I think I looked it up. It's just...
Oh, God, I'll check.
But yeah, so sad.
All right. We've run long. Kuma 03, Barry Guy 3. Dan, do you want to take this away?
Yeah, Barry Guy 3. Okay, so if you've seen Gunpla Fighters Beginner or whatever, there's original Bear Guy. You just take the head off of an Ak guy and you put a bear head on. That's it.
So good.
So Bear Guy 3 or Bear Guy San, which is a play on words if you know Japanese. So 3 is San, mm-hmm. and San is Mr. or Miss. It's just like, yeah, an honorific kind of. Anyhow, it's a yellow boy. It looks like a bear. It's made by China. It's filled with cotton. That's its gimmick.
The other thing about this is that it gives way to the single best battle log, which are like these side stories they produced. Maybe we could do an episode because there's like 8 of those. We'll just do an episode on all of them at once.
There are. We'd have to finish Try first because it has some.
Yeah, but where, yeah, like all the Ak guys are furious that their parts have been sacrificed to just make bear guys. It's really, which is good.
An extremely deep cut if you've never built a bear guy. So I guess I'll explain the joke. When you build a bear guy, they use a lot of the same runners, which are the big pieces of plastic altogether that you cut the parts out from. It uses the same runners as the Ak guy. So in order for cost saving, instead of having to make new unique runners and blah, 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 they just use the old ones. Which means when you're done building a bear guy, there's a lot of Ak guy parts still attached to it that you would never use, like the heads and stuff. And that's where that episode comes from. So yeah, the only way you'd ever know that is if you built yourself a bear guy, which I think they... no, there's only 3. There's Mama Guy, Bear Guy San, and Bear Guy, I think.
Okay.
So you have to build one of those 3.
There's many other forms of Bear Guy, though, in Gundam Media.
Yes. Oh, but yes. Tom.
Those are the ones that exist. So, Dan, it's a pity we've gone long, because we're about to go even longer.
I was going to say,
I think we should put this off until next week. I'm being serious. We put this off until next week, because that's when it really gets to shine.
I know. Unfortunately, we get a lot of new mobile suits next week, too. But yes, I think you're right, because we actually don't have its premiere episode yet, right?
Yeah. So, folks, not gonna push around the bush. The Camp for Amazing is the single greatest mobile suit in all of Build Fighters. And we're going to talk about it next week when it takes part in the single greatest fight in all of Build Fighters.
I know that's a very controversial statement, but I will not comment on it.
I feel like if you've listened to any episode of this podcast at all, it should not surprise you that this is my stance.
Yeah.
Dan, what are your final thoughts?
It's good, man. I can't believe I'm having such a good time with this show, and this is, no kidding, this is like my 5th or 6th time watching it, and it's still so good. So do yourself a favor, again, make sure to watch the Japanese dub, because the Filipino English dub is really bad. But it's watchable, but don't do it. So yeah, just watch it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I love this show. It rips. It's really fun. It's just fun to watch. I'm really enjoying watching a show that goes by really quickly. In a way, mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Nothing is agonizing here. It's just relaxing. So watch Build Fighters. It's really fun. You won't regret it, because at the very least, you'll think it's a little boring, but I think that's it.
I don't know anyone who's seen this show and been like, yeah, that kind of sucks. Everyone loves it. So watch it. Yeah. It's good.
I guess the only way you could oppose it, if you believe it violates the sanctity of the Gundam franchise, in which case, I've got bad news for you about capitalism, son. Like, Gundam has never been like this really artistic franchise. I mean, it was made to sell toys. Build Fighters just eats into that. Really leans into it. All right. Next week, we're watching Build Fighters 17 through 24, 25. We're watching the end of the show. I think it's 17 through 25. So tune in, finish the show, all on YouTube, of course. If you want to reach out to us and once again add to the list of Gundam references that we've missed, you can reach us at mechadoaboutnothing@gmail.com. That's the name of the podcast, @gmail.com. Our website is mechado.moe, and our Twitter account is @mechadoopodcast. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Ian.
Until next week, will you be able to survive?